Good morning. On today's programme, the Nigerian public reacts to an airstrike on their country launched by the US. And tension between the US and Denmark over Greenland. US President Donald Trump has said he would like to annex the Arctic island, while Greenlanders themselves say they must decide their own future. But first, we go to Japan. The country is facing increasing tensions with China about the contested status of Taiwan. In the past week, China has held military drills around Taiwan, simulating the seizure and blockade of the island as a warning to separatist forces. In response, Taiwan has deployed its own forces to monitor the situation, saying it is on high alert to defend its territory and to protect its people. Brian Gaynor has this report.
Yonaguni is a remote island at the westernmost tip of the Japanese archipelago. Home to only a couple of hundred people, it is famous for its sunsets and scuba diving. Although it is 2,000 kilometers from Tokyo, it is just 110 kilometers from Taiwan. On a clear day, you can actually see Taiwan. Though whether you are looking at the Autonomous Republic of China, to give Taiwan its official name, or the wayward Chinese province of Taiwan, depends on your political perspective. Either way, in the past week, your view would have been obstructed by a flotilla of Chinese Navy warships carrying out live-fire military drills. They were part of Operation Justice Mission 2025, a training mission designed to simulate the blockade of Taiwan as the precursor to a full invasion. China described the military exercises as a stern warning to opponents of Beijing's claims to the island. Foremost amongst these opponents is Japan, particularly in the hawkish persona of its new Prime Minister, Takeuchi Sanae. Since taking office in November, Sino-Japanese relations have rapidly deteriorated, particularly after comments Takeuchi made in the Japanese parliament. She described any Chinese blockade or invasion of Taiwan as potentially a survival-threatening situation for Japan. In such a scenario, Japanese law would permit the deployment of Japanese military forces to aid Taiwan. To China, such comments represented an unwarranted interference in Chinese domestic affairs. Reaction was swift and vitriolic. The Chinese Consul General in Osaka wrote on social media, "If you stick that filthy neck where it doesn't belong, it's going to get sliced off." Less colourfully, but more effectively, China imposed a series of economic penalties. It banned seafood imports from Japan, cancelled concerts in China by Japanese performers, halted many flights to Japan, and actively discouraged Chinese tourists and students from visiting and studying in the country. However, as prominent as these measures have been, diplomatically, they represent a reproving rap across the knuckles more than a full-blown argument. Seafood and music performers account for a very small share of Japanese exports to China. More notable brands, such as Toyota, Sony and Uniqlo, have continued to trade without any official interference. Chinese tourists are still coming in droves to enjoy the ski resorts all across Japan. As with much of Chinese politics, domestic concerns dictate much of the country's foreign affairs. For all their denouncements of aggressive Japanese imperialism, the leaders in Beijing are nervous about any overt public displays of nationalism. Anti-Japanese street protests could very easily morph into dissatisfaction with the Chinese government. An ongoing housing crisis, high youth unemployment, and a slowing economy are all issues that exercise Chinese citizens more than a diplomatic spat with its eastern neighbour. Further east again is America, whose relationships with both Japan and Taiwan, China must also take into consideration. In December, President Trump announced an $11 billion arms package for Taiwan, whilst its ambassador to Japan recently reaffirmed publicly that the United States is fully committed to the defense of Japan. Japan is also committing resources to its own defense. It has boosted military spending, with its defense budget having nearly doubled since 2020 to some 9 trillion yen. Some of that money has been spent on Yonaguni, with the installation of a new military radar facility and the forthcoming deployment of anti-aircraft missiles on the island. Although China insists that Taiwan is an integral part of One China and has ordered its military to be ready to invade the island by 2027, the complex reality undermines such simple rhetoric. Since becoming a democracy, the Taiwanese people have consistently voted for pro-independence political parties, a continuing electoral rebuke to China's authoritarian claims of inevitable unification. What Prime Minister Takeuchi's remarks have done is publicly acknowledge the hitherto unspoken status quo, that there is nothing inevitable about such a claim. Rather, she has highlighted how the fate of Taiwan is a shared regional responsibility involving Japan, the United States, and yes, China. Unwittingly, Beijing's policy of bellicose intimidation seems to have had the unwanted effect of bolstering support for Taiwan's continued autonomy. For World Report, this is Brian Gaynor in Hokkaido, Japan.
Next to Nigeria, where on Christmas Day, the US launched airstrikes against militants linked to Islamic State in the northwestern part of the country. The operation was conducted in coordination with the Nigerian government. In October, President Donald Trump accused extremist groups of killing Christians, a claim rejected by Nigerian authorities, who pointed out that extremist violence has killed both Christians and Muslims across the country. Public reaction within Nigeria to the airstrikes has been sharply divided, as Pollum David now reports.
On Christmas night, in a small farming village in northwestern Nigeria, most people were already asleep. 40-year-old Sanusi Modabo was lying beside his wife when the night suddenly turned bright. Almost like daytime, there was a roar, the ground shook, and the sky glowed red. Modabo rushed outside his mud house. Neighbors were already gathering, confused, and everyone was so afraid. Some thought a plane had crashed. Others feared that their village was probably under an attack. For hours, they stayed awake watching the sky, and by morning, they discovered they had witnessed something unusual in Nigeria's long battle with insecurity, a United States military airstrike. So it happened that the United States carried out coordinated airstrikes against militant camps in Nigeria's northwest, targeting fighters that are linked to the Islamic State group. The operation was conducted by the U.S. military's Africa Command, AFRICOM, in coordination with Nigerian authorities. U.S. officials say the airstrikes involved more than a dozen precision-guided munitions, including Tomahawk cruise missiles and attacks from MQ-9 Reaper drones launched from a U.S. naval ship in the Gulf of Guinea. The targets were militant camps in Sokoto State, near Nigeria's border with Niger, an area that security officials described as a transit corridor for foreign fighters that are entering from the Sahel region. AFRICOM says multiple Islamic State fighters were killed. Nigeria's Defense Headquarters later confirmed the camps were key assembly and command centers used by militants planning attacks. While casualty figures have not yet been released, both governments insist that the strikes were precision hits and that no civilians were killed. However, debris from the strikes landed in nearby communities, prompting Nigerian security forces to cordon off affected areas and warn residents not to touch missile fragments. The airstrikes followed weeks of growing tension between Washington and Abuja. In October 2025, U.S. President Donald Trump accused extremist groups in Nigeria of killing Christians and declared Nigeria as a country of particular concern. He warned that the United States could intervene militarily if the violence continues. On Christmas Day, that warning became a reality. Authorities are rejecting claims of a Christian genocide, pointing out that extremist violence has killed both Christians and Muslims across the country. Also, Nigeria's Foreign Minister Yusuf Tuggar have said the strikes were approved by President Bola Tinubu and they were carried out with full respect for the country's sovereignty. He described the operation as a joint effort and called it a new phase of an old conflict. He said terrorist violence, whether directed at Christians, Muslims, or other communities, remains an affront to Nigeria's values and to international peace and security. The Defense Headquarters says a full battle damage assessment is ongoing and that more details will be released. Meanwhile, public reaction in Nigeria has been sharply divided. Some citizens and even Christian leaders have welcomed the strikes, calling them long overdue and saying they offered hope to communities that have endured years of killings and kidnappings. Others, however, have expressed deep concern. Islamic cleric Sheikh Ahmed Gumi condemned the operation, describing foreign military involvement as a threat to Nigeria's sovereignty and warned that it could inflame religious tensions. He called on the Nigerian government to demand the withdrawal of U.S. forces and argued that American involvement could turn Nigeria into a battleground. Security analysts say such divisions underline the sensitivity of foreign military action in a deeply multi-religious country. Nigeria has been battling terrorism since 2009 when Boko Haram launched an insurgency in the northeast. Over time, splinter groups aligned with Islamic State emerged, while armed banditry and criminal networks spread across other regions, including the northwest. Despite years of military offensives, intelligence coordination, community engagement, and international partnerships, insecurity persists. According to conflict monitoring groups, more than 12,000 people were killed by violent groups in Nigeria in 2025 alone. Analysts caution that while airstrikes can disrupt militant operations, they rarely end insurgencies without strong ground operations, intelligence reform, and political will. Now, back in Jabo village, the sky is dark again, but residents say sleep does not come easily anymore. They are left with memories of a night that turned red and a war that suddenly felt really close. The $1 million question remains. Will foreign firepower finally weaken the militants, or will it complicate an already fragile fight? For World Report in Abuja, Nigeria, I am Palum David.
Finally, to Denmark. The US has sparked a fresh tension with the Danish government after appointing a special envoy to Greenland. The Arctic island President Trump has said he would like to annex. Denmark has called on the US ambassador for an explanation, while Greenland has said the island must decide on its own future and its territorial integrity must be respected. Tom Carstensen now reports.
The first sign something was wrong wasn't the appointment itself. It was the silence around it. Danish officials learned through reporting that Trump had named a new Greenland envoy, a role that, diplomatically speaking, doesn't really exist unless the countries involved agree it does. Denmark hadn't. Neither had Greenland. Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen was asked about it in the days leading up to her New Year's address. Her response was clipped, almost wary. Greenland, she said, is not for sale. Denmark expects allies to respect sovereignty. The subtext was clear. This is not how partners behave. Then came her New Year's speech. Carefully worded, but unmistakable, Frederiksen warned against great powers thinking they can redraw maps by pressure or force. She didn't say Trump's name. She didn't need to. The same restraint marked the Danish king's own New Year's address. King Frederik X spoke warmly of the unity of the realm, of Greenland's people and culture, of shared responsibility in a dangerous world. He avoided confrontation. That hesitation matters. This is not an abstract issue for him. Before becoming king, Frederik served in Greenland with the elite Sirius Patrol, dog sledding across the high Arctic, living for months at a time in some of the harshest conditions on Earth. He knows Greenland not as a bargaining chip, but as a place, as partly a home. When a monarch with that background chooses his words carefully, it's not ignorance, it's gravity. Trump's latest idea, floated openly by allies and privately by intermediaries, is that Greenland's strategic value gives the United States a right to secure it. Sometimes this is framed as protection, sometimes as necessity. Sometimes barely disguised as entitlement. If that idea were ever acted on by force, the consequences would be immediate and historic. Denmark is a founding member of NATO. An armed US move against Greenland would mean one NATO country attacking the territory of another. Article 5, the Alliance Mutual Defense Clause, was never designed for that scenario. The alliance wouldn't just be tested, it would be broken. And it's very, very important to remember that the US have a base in Greenland and they are allowed to build more. No one would ever stop them. Danish security scholars have warned that the mere suggestion erodes trust inside NATO. This isn't the first time foreign leaders have pushed back. French President Emmanuel Macron has warned that the Arctic is not a playground for new imperialism. German officials have spoken of sovereignty. And yet, the pattern keeps repeating. Trump's inner circle has traveled north before, including family members. His son famously visited Greenland, meeting locals, posting photos, treating geopolitics like content. Each visit was officially private. Each landed like a provocation. The effect inside Greenland has been profound. for the first time in its political history, Greenland now has a broad coalition government. Parties that disagree on independence, economics, and resources, suddenly united by one thing, resisting external pressure from Washington. There have been demonstrations in Nuuk, the capital. Hand-painted signs, American flags crossed out. For a society of under 60,000 people, that's not noise, that's alarm. Even Denmark's normally cautious intelligence language has shifted. The Danish Defense Intelligence Service, FE, now openly refers to the United States as a potential adversary in the Arctic context. That word choice is extraordinary. Allies don't usually describe each other that way unless something fundamental has cracked. So where does this go? In the short term, tension, denials, diplomatic smiles stretched thin. In the medium term, more American attention to the Arctic, framed as security, and in the long term, a colder reality. Greenland will still decide its own future. That hasn't changed, but the world around it is hardening, less patient, more transactional. When great powers stop pretending they respect rules, small countries stop pretending they feel safe. Denmark is used to living next to giants. Our survival strategy has always been boring. Law, alliances, predictability. It's never been glamorous, but it's kept the peace. That system only works if everyone agrees the map is not a suggestion. For RTE World Report in Elsinore, Denmark, this is Tom Carstensen.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or find us on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Ethna Dodd, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.